Morning.
Morning.
Quickly, 30 seconds about where I get some where we're at. That's obviously just to say the same, which is cool. Father, I'm sure it's father. I am kind of working for, has anyone heard of NCS? There's a group in the Challenge that work for them. So I work for the Challenge in Manchester. I'm one of the managers that run the Greater Manchester youth project. About 3,500 people for us in this year, better for it. So I'm about to start 12 to 14 hour days over the hot summer, which will be probably the best time of my life. No, it's a good program. It's funny because actually coming from a church youth work background, it's a fairly unremarkable program in the sense that as a church, we do everything naturally that they're being hailed for. And it's not a negative against them, it's a positive for the church. But if you've got young people that have grown up through church, they're doing all these things that people in the wider community go, whoa, and everyone from church goes, yeah. And it's also helpful for me because I haven't heard of ideas that we need 12 years ago in church, so I'm going to have all dreams out of it, which is nice. Karen is still doing her hair business. She's probably got too many clients at the point. Doing it around the kids is crazy and exciting, and basically she doesn't sleep that much, which is we've sleep trained Jesse in the last week because my son was about to get crazy, so that was good to run. For London, because let's be honest, when you only get into a routine with kids and then you come out of that routine and hope that the best that it goes back into that bigger home. But you're sleeping 11.5 hours, so that's how the journey is all along. This morning, I just want to start before I say anything else, because I think that's a good place to start. God, thank you for today. I thank you for everyone that's in this room. I thank you that there are lots of unfamiliar faces in this room since the last 18 months, when we moved away. I just thank you for what you're doing in this place, and that we have the privilege to come around your word this morning. Amen. Good. So this morning I'm talking about the topic of journeys. There's many things to say about journeys. There's four main points I'm going to sort of come to this morning. These aren't all the points, so maybe you can go and think about some other points in your own personal study time. I like Sam. I've just got three questions for you. Is that all right? Okay, question number one. Where have you come today?
Where have I come?
Church. Good. Where have you come from? Good. That's kind of the first question we'll put to half. Second question, who did you bring?
Charlie and Phil.
Okay, why did you bring Charlie and Phil?
Because I need to be
here with them. And what did you bring today? What did you bring with you?
Myself and my kids.
Did you sell me keys? Which I meant like it. Wasn't that angle, was it?
No.
You wait. No. Cool, I'm just going to read a bit of the Bible, if that's okay. If you've got a Bible or an iPhone, type in the word Genesis, and then the number 12, and we're reading verse number 1. If you've got an actual book, you're really close to the start. I'm going to share with you, just a quick, how I remember the first 5 books of the Bible, because I like it, it's my new thing, I'm sharing lots of people. It's Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy. Remember it, but a teenage boy, okay? They went GL, but no GL. GELND. Tell me a boy that doesn't do that, and I'll tell you about it. Anyway, Genesis 12, verse 1 through to 9. Here we go. The Lord said to Abram, leave your country, your people, and your father's household to go to the land I will show you. I will make you into a great nation, and I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, I will curse those who curse you, and all people on earth will be blessed through you. So Abram left, as the Lord had told him, and Lot went with him. Abram was 75 years old when he set out from Haran. He took his wife Sarai, his nephew Lot, all the possessions he had accumulated, and the people he acquired in Haran, and they set out for the land of Canaan. They arrived there. Abram travelled through the land as far as far as the site of the great tree of Morah in at Shechem. The same problem that I had is called Shechem. It's just me. At that time, the Canaanites were in the land. The Lord appeared to Abram and said, to your offspring, I will give this land. So he built an altar there to the Lord and appeared to him. From there, he went towards the hills east of Bethel and pitched his tent with Bethel on the west and Ai on the east. He built an altar there to the Lord and called on the name of the Lord. Then Abram set out and continued towards the Negev. He was on a journey, okay? He was on a journey, he had many stopping points, he had many camping points, he had points along the way that he would like to stop, build an altar, pray, and those would become significant sites later on in the journey of Israel and the people. But this morning, from that sort of passage of scripture, I want to just draw out a few points on journeys that I hope is going to help someone this morning. And number one, question number one to Becky was that, sorry, I didn't clean it. Let's just go for a Becky. Point number one this morning, though, is journeys only really make sense when we know your destinations. I know in this story, Abram didn't really know his destination in terms of a physical place, but he knew his destination because he received a promise from God. So God didn't say, go 3 meters forward, there's 6 miles left, and then you reach the point. He just said, go, and I'll show you, and I'll do lots of things for you. I don't think there's many people in the world that will jump on a plane for 20-odd hours for fun, to get on a plane and jump, come 20 hours back. I think the reason they jump on a plane for 20 hours is to go to New Zealand or Australia and have a good time, see something different. Because the journey is only, the point of the journey is actually the destination. And then when you're coming home, the point of that journey is that you're going home to where you've planted, where you're from, everything you've invested in. If anyone just takes 20-hour flights, A, you've got probably too much money, and B, different hobbies are probably a cheaper. Abram went on this journey, and before in that scripture, it says, there's about two or three verses where it says, I will, I will, I will, I will, I will. So God gave him these promises. He said, I'm going to do this in your life. I'm going to do this in your life. I'm going to do this in your life. Notice he said, he didn't say, at this point I will do. At this point I will do. He just said, I will. Okay. So the journey wasn't clear that he had a promise, or I'm going to call it a destination that he was going to go to. His journey was many, many years, through good times, through bad times, but he always focused on that destination. I'm 33 years old, and I'm thinking 75 sounds quite old. For some people in the room, 75 seems a few years ago, and for some people in the room, 75 is pretty close, I know. It's just a numbers game, guys, it's not rude. You were born at a certain day, it's a certain day now, and here the time's passed. But I just want to ask you, really, what has God promised you in the past? What has he given to you as a promise in your future? And if you don't know that, have you asked him? And maybe that's a good thing to start with. And also, what have you forgotten that God's promised you? Because sometimes, you forget what God's promised you, you're going through something, and you're going, why am I going through this? This is ridiculous. And it's really difficult if you forgot what the destination is. Can you imagine if you woke up on a plane and had amnesia? You're like 2 hours into a 20-hour flight to Australia and go, what am I doing? Like, why am I in this metal box in the sky? Like, can you imagine how freaked out you'd be at that point? And then until someone goes to you, you're on a plane to Australia, like, I'll sleep. This is the best thing ever. But it's that kind of thing, isn't it? Like, if you don't know where your destination is, sometimes that journey is just like, I mean, plane food is pretty. I mean, that loves it. You said to me before, you love plane food, it's pretty awesome. Like, this is alright, it's fine, but like, restaurants are better food, right? For cheaper. No? It's different. Just a quick aside, my dad once went on a plane, right? Didn't matter where the plane was to or from, but now his app tracks that plane, constantly just looks where it is. Oh, on the way flat number B1796 orders. All these nice, lovely. One time he was in an airport, okay, the plane was there, and he just missed it. Didn't see it, but it's very sad. And one, they thought he was going to get on the same plane with him. This is the main part. Do you know what? Like, on a journey, you go through tough times. But for Abram, the main tough time that we kind of, when we think about Abram, who became Abraham, the main tough time for him was the fact that he was fatherless. We were talking on Father's Day about being, like, you know, if you are fatherless. But he was fatherless for years and years and years. And the promise of his whole life was, I will make you a father of nations. I will give you your inheritance. Your inheritance will be for your offspring, and they'll inherit this land. And you're like, I'm 75, God, and I've not had a child. I mean, what is going on here? But the point is that was his biggest struggle. He was still walking through that at 75. In fact, you could say, at 75, you received his promise to start walking into that. And so, I'm not 75 yet, so if God's still got promises for me, like, I'm 75, I'm pretty excited about that, especially as about being fathers of nations and things. And sometimes it's easy to lose focus on what you've been promised. You may start to question the journey, even the destination, and then actually the method of transport, how long it's taking to get to the destination you want to get to. And Shannon, just chuck that thing on straight away. So when I was praying about this in December, we sing this song a lot at our church in Up North. In Up North. That's why I say bye, because no one understands what I say. So it's like a good. But this is the chorus of the song Take Courage, right? And what I love about this is take courage my heart, stay steadfast my soul, he's in the waiting.
Yeah.
Hold on to your hope as a triumph unfolds, he's never failing. So the whole thing of this is that God is in the journey. The journey isn't the point of success, right? God is in the journey. Now, in fact, actually, most of what God's got for you is within the journey. The destination is because you've been on the journey in the first place. So stop hating the journey, get on with it, and I'm going to stop getting in the words. But the other thing with that is, as well, if I love it, it says, hold on to your hope, so that's your responsibility, right? As your triumph unfolds, why? Because God's won the battle in the end anyway. He's never failing. So if you do your part, which is hold on to your hope, okay? Hold on to that promise. Remember the destination God's got for you, and carry on walking that journey. I think last week, Nick, he spoke about taking a step, didn't he? Journeys may have lots of different steps, right? So I can't think of talks like that. No, I just turned cheat chain. God is in that journey, okay? The journey isn't about getting from one place to another. It's about readying you for when you do get to that place. So take one step at a time and carry on that journey. That's point number one. Everyone say point number one? Point number one was journeys only make sense when you know your destination. Point number two. Point number two, what did I ask Becky earlier? I asked Babs, who did you bring with you? Okay? So point number two is you can decide who you take on your journey. Have you ever been on a trip with someone you didn't want to be on a trip with? Yeah? Does it make the journey better or worse? Yeah, every time? Yeah. Have you ever been on a plane, right? My friend Dan, okay, he's a friend to strong acquaintance on that kind of level. We're not best friends, but I'd say we saw each other this week, we stopped in Harlem and made a level of coffee. And he's the young adult pastor at Hillsong. And he had this Instagram post for the week where he was flying somewhere, I don't know where it was, and it's him on a plane. And there were two seats, even in the aisle, there were two seats next to him. He was saying, Jesus, if you're real. And then kind of like looking at the two seats. And then like the next Instagram post was, Jesus is real, with two seats empty his entire journey. And then on the way back, they're the same Instagram posts. And I'm like, that's fake, right there. Three seats on a plane together, both journeys. Ooh. Have you ever been picked, like had the awkward kind of like stinky feeling on a bus on a school journey? It just makes the journey worse. Just being honest. It's just a fact. But in verse 4, okay, it says, so Abram left as the Lord had told him. And not only did Abram is 75, and he set out for Haran, and then he took his wife, his nephew, all his possessions, and the people he required, and then left. So Abram, on his journey, kind of he was called, but kind of Lot kind of with him. And Abram allowed Lot to go with him. So he didn't say, and Abram got argued and Lot stayed back at the ranch. Abram was like, yeah, cool, come along, that's great. In chapter 13, they've both become wealthy. They've both kind of become so wealthy, in fact that the land can't hold all of their stuff. And actually they're sort of servants, like, you know, people they've got around them start arguing because they're arguing over the land because there's too many sheep to feed, they've only got a couple of fields, and so they start arguing. So they, that's causing some strife. And then because of that, Abraham goes, cool, we need to split ways now because we can't sustain what we've got together, so we need to part ways and go. Our journeys have come to a point where we can't journey together anymore. In chapter 14, Abram stops his journey, turns around, goes back to where he came from, went back to where Lot had gone, and then had to save him. So at what point do you reckon Abram regretted bringing Lot? Just one question. Did he regret bringing Lot? But sometimes you make this decision, you go, yeah, come on, this is great, let's do this together. And then like you get in there, like, I don't know, maybe you had a business partner that was like great on paper, but in reality it was a complete nightmare to work with. You know, I've got a couple of banks in my businesses with a business partner, like, look great on paper, but had some issues in the background that came to the surface later on in the business, and then business collapsed because they weren't a reliable person. So, really, I'm kind of talking in one sense to say, really, not everyone needs to know about your journey. Not everyone needs to come along with your journey. You can pick your friends, and you can pick who you take counsel from, who you take advice from. I've said it so many times with young people, I've said it so many times with young people, like, don't listen to everybody, because everyone has no good advice. My biggest pet peeve in the world is vloggers on YouTube. They're nice people, I'm sure, but I hate the concept of it, because anyone can just sit on the internet and go, ask me advice, I'll tell you what, I'll tell you all about it, and all they really know about was like hair bottles they talked about for like 6 months, and then 200,000 people listened to them and liked their hair bottle idea, and now they're giving some advice on, like, I don't know, like, what route to take in their life. And you're like, no! Stop it! Stop it! And as a youth worker, I would find myself undoing and unpicking nonsense that people who have got no right to give advice out will give me advice out for. Because someone let that person on their journey of their life and let them direct where they're going. And I think, you know, it's not just bloggers on YouTube, it's anybody. You can listen to anybody, you can pick up the whatever paper you read and, like, you read an article, and that article could change your life. You go, well, political stance has changed entirely on this. There's one article wrote by one person who blatantly got a smart thing, and they just ruined the media for them, so. I'm not saying don't read papers, I'm just saying you can choose to be taken the journey. And also, Facebook, Instagram, all that kind of jazz, if you're not on that, then it's pretty easy for you to do this, but not everyone needs to know what you're feeling every single second of the day. Not everyone needs to hear the update on how bad your day's going. Put positive things on there. I'm having a bad day, but. Or leave out the first bit and say, hey, today's gone really well for the following one reason. I managed to get to work on time. Isn't that awesome? Or don't write anything. Just cool. Okay. Do you know what? I'm not having a go at social media. I love social media. It's cool. I mostly use it. I use the social media training once. I'm known as a stalker on social media, which basically means that I don't write anything, I just read a lot. That's a stalker. If you write loads of things, you're a talker. And if you don't write anything, if you don't write much, you don't watch a lot, you just share loads of stuff, you're a sleepwalker. Yeah? I don't know whether you know those three things, but I'm a stalker. Maybe this isn't recorded, but that's a sign that I can come up with in the past. I can go back to the last minute. Anyway, when I ask you a question, really, is who are you taking on your journey at the moment that you may just stop and let off your next stop to carry on your journey in a more successful way? Sometimes that's like, I'm not saying you just, like, you know, delete them off your phone, ignore their calls or whatever, but actually sometimes you can change the atmosphere of a relationship, can't you? Where you go like, oh, you know, this truth you say, and then actually you kind of, you can distance yourself slightly from something over a period of time. And I think sometimes that's harsh in a way, but actually necessary, because you've got to think about your journey that you're on. Okay, point number three. Point number three. Okay, so far we've had journey only makes sense when you know what the destination is. You can decide who you take on your journey. And number three, every journey has a baggage limit. I asked Babs earlier, what did you bring with you? She brought some kids. That's good. That's a nice large journey to them. Necessary thing. It's too important to them. Yeah. Depending on the journey, and depending on the mode of transport for that journey, it determines what you can carry, what you can bring with you, right? So when we come down from Manchester this time, we packed light. We didn't bring the pram as the main. We did pack fairly light, we didn't bring the pram. The pram basically fills up 2/3 of our entire boot space. Then we the kids basically have a suitcase bounce on their face for the rest of the journey, which isn't ideal, but we're not legally safe. But either way, we make it and we have all our stuff. If you're on a flight, depending on the flight, you've got to change and have to decide how much baggage you have. I went out to America, Canada, when I was in university. It was amazing how, when I first packed my bag, how full my bag was compared to when I last packed my bag. So I got used to how to pack my bag better later on as I was going through. So I could actually therefore cope with more of the baggage, right? On the way home than I did there, which was good for all lots of problems. If you take too much stuff on your journey, you can slow your journey down. In fact, you can actually cause your journey to come to a complete halt. If I overfill my car, and overfill my car, I'll put a roof box on the back, and show a trailer on the back, fill it, there'll be a point, there'll be a limit when my car breaks, because that's not that long, it's no longer the right vehicle for my journey. The wisdom thing, really. But at the end of chapter 12, I've noticed something I hadn't noticed before in the story of Abram, or Abraham as it becomes. I'm going to read you a few verses, so bear with me on this. So, verse 10, now there was a famine in the land. Abram went to Egypt to live there for a while because the famine was so severe. As he was about to enter Egypt, he said to his wife, Sarah, I know what a beautiful woman you are. That's nice, isn't it? That's nice. When the Egyptians see you, they will say, this is his wife, then they will kill me to let you live. Everyone say, ah. Say you're my sister, so that we will be treated well for your sake and my life will be spared with you. Everyone say, what? That is a nonsense plan. Right? That is a nonsense plan. That plan is full of compromise, right?
Ridiculous.
Okay, let's read on. When they came to Egypt, the Egyptians did see that she was a very beautiful woman, and Pharaoh's officials, when they saw her, they praised her to Pharaoh that she was taken into his palace. He treated Abram well for her sake, and Abram acquired sheep, cattle, and field dog, male and female donkeys, manservants and maidservants, and camels. But the Lord inflicted serious diseases on Pharaoh, his household, because of Abram's wife Sarah. So Pharaoh's son of Abram, what have you done to me? He said, why didn't you tell me she was your wife? Why did you say she is my sister? So I took her to be my wife. Now, here's your wife, take her and go. And the Pharaoh gave orders to Abram and to his men, they sent him on his way and his wife with everything that he had. I don't think the sheep, the cattle, the manservants, the maidservants are probably worth having someone else marry your wife and think they're really lovable. That's full Jeremy Carl, isn't it? That's full Jeremy Carl. That's crazy. Abram was forced into this situation in a sense because he's on his journey. There was a famine, there was a time of hardship, there was a time where he had loads of stuff. And you're talking about, there's sheep and cattle and things, there's a famine, there's less food, there's less grass to eat, all that kind of stuff. So he made a choice to go into Egypt. He got converted. That's kind of, sometimes that's not necessarily a bad thing, but we'll read on for now and decide whether it was in this situation. The situation he got himself into was basically to make, he kind of went a bit self-aware. He was like, I don't want to die, therefore I'm basically going to give you away, my wife, my lovely, darling wife, give you away to be someone else's husband. And now, the problem is for this, is that Abram's wife was also part of the promise, because she was the person who was going to give him the child, who was going to be the father of nations. So he's just given his promise away. He hasn't just gone, I've got 9 wives, so I have wife number 4. It's a pick a wife, any wife. He's gone, this is my wife, Sarah. Please don't kill me. I'm her brother. You just realised it. Just good, thanks. biggest cheerleader in my life. But later on in the story, he again chases after the promise really hard. And how does he do that? His wife Sarah gives him her like maidservant and says, look, have a baby with her, and then, you know, we'll have a baby with him. And that wasn't the promise, that was just another child, it wasn't the promise of God. Now, interestingly, I'm kind of reading outside the line of the Bible. This is real life. People that have real life feelings. Can you imagine how guilty Sarah may have felt about being someone, she was married to someone, then she's now forced to marry this guy, and everything that goes along with that. Not only that, she was basically the queen of like Egypt, this project, like power and all this sort of stuff, but she then goes back to Abram and still can't give him a kid. It's kind of like this really tough situation. So she goes, look, I'm going to help you here. Take Hagar, she's a babe, have a child with her. But that created more baggage for him, because now, not only is he married to his wife, he doesn't matter to his boy, of course, the maidservant has now had a child with him. Interestingly, it says later on about Hagar, when this whole thing's happening, Hagar was an Egyptian slave. So where did Hagar probably come from? Probably came from the time that he compromised everything to pick up some maidservants and things. So sometimes your baggage, your compromise, gives you most of the time, your baggage and compromise causes you to make decisions that then cause you more baggage and compromise later on down the line because you didn't deal with the situation for the first time. So now when you do deal with the situation later, you've now got double baggage, more stuff maybe, which then means more effort to carry down. It means unforeseen circumstances knock you harder because you've got to like try and drive the ship when you're trying to, you've got to really high. So I'm asking the question again, a different question, I guess, but what baggage are you carrying? What do you need to put down? And has your baggage caused you to compromise your promise? The three big questions, I'm sorry about that, I've asked you a few questions, I'm going to wrap it up together in the end. But kind of, I think that's a really big thing for some people. What things are you taking? What hurts are you carrying from the past that God doesn't want you to carry anymore? Because those hurts are going to weigh you down, those hurts are going to be difficult to take with you, and it will be difficult moving forwards. Point number four. Your journey is your journey. Do not be jealous of other people's journeys. You don't know how they got to where they've got to now. Abram did become the father of nations. And if you look in, like, you can read the Bible, you can read a book, you can read an autobiography, you don't read a whole bit in the middle, you just look at a person and go, oh. Like, Cristiano Ronaldo, if you want to be a footballer, you probably want to be either him or Messi, that's the kind of the two you want to be. Right? Ronaldo turned up to train earlier today than Leeds in the game. He's 32 years old, but still probably the fittest player on the team. Why? Because his journey, he takes seriously every single day. Right? If I'm honest, I want to score a few goals in the Champions League final, I want to lift the World Cup, I'd love to do those things. Am I willing to genuinely work with skills at first? That's just one thing. But also, I really need to work that hard because I'll be honest, I've been to the gym three times probably in my entire life. Maybe Cristiano Ronaldo beats me in a week. Do you know what I mean? I'm not willing to do the journey of Ronaldo to get to the point that he is. And let's forget the whole, I'm also not quite as good as what he is. Although I haven't played it since I was 100 years old. I became the father of nations, but would you have wanted to walk the journey that you walked on? Camping every night, the whole thing about Egypt, about Egypt in mind. In fact, actually, when we went to Egypt, I was offered some genuinely offered things about camels to my wife. She also was offered that someone come like me to she could stay with him. Fortunately, she made all the tough choices 3 days ago. Do you know what? On a real personal, like, honest level here, I was a youth pastor for, I was working in youth since I was 15, so I'm like, it's 18 years working with youth work because we have like, a good system of being young leaders through the ranks and everything. And if I'm honest, I've seen people move into the area, get promotions, get speaking engagements, get better relationships with bigger pastors than I have. Was I gracious at all points about that? No. But the thing is that person, I actually love them, basically, they're one of my best mates. But the problem is, I'm looking at the journey, and I'm being jealous of the perceived destination of their life, but actually, that's not my journey. And yeah, I could probably be better at networking. Yes, I could probably make more effort. Do you know what I mean? I could do certain things to change stuff. But at the end of the day, they're walking their journey, and I'm walking my journey. If I try to walk his journey, I do it badly, because I'm not him, but I have the same problems and problems on my life as they are. I think it was, you know, you wrestle with like wanting to champion someone in what they're doing and say, you're amazing, but at the same time, they're like, I wish I was thinking you. You've got this so easy, you've got this down there. Like, but I don't know what they go for on Tuesday night when it's raining outside and they're arguing with their wife. Or, do you know what I mean? Like, you don't see the stuff that goes on behind the doors. I'm not in that person's head, knowing that like the things that they're struggling with. What's happened to them in the past when they were a child and they're still, like, I'm not saying that's really happening in this person, but do you know what I mean? The stuff that I can hide quite well in my life, like hurt some things, that you can go, that Andrew's really easy, isn't he? He's, you know, got a red t-shirt on. I wish I had a red t-shirt. It's a poor time, you know. When you compare yourself to other people, it's not usually the journey that you're comparing, it's the perceived destination or the destination they've already arrived at. And the problem with that is that the call or the promise of their life determines their journey. The journey itself is just that, like that thing of going one step at a time, doing what you're told to do by God, maybe making a bad choice and stepping back into the journey of God and keep moving on. But comparison really justifies and makes you sad, doesn't it? Like you can do positive comparison, saying, oh, how can you're doing this really well, how can we as a church, like, maybe change a couple of little things and maybe like do things a little better? That's kind of sort of okay comparison, maybe you're like, hot. But most of the time, let's be honest, comparison is, you're like this, I'm like this, I'm gonna be like that. Well, I'm better than you anyway, so more confusing me to call you insecure anyway. Truth of God, sorry. Okay. I said at the start, everyone is on a journey. And I think really, you need to choose to travel your journey well. That's kind of where I'm going with this. How you travel your journey directly influences those around you, those who start their journey, and also those people are people that need, some of them need to start their journey towards Jesus. So how you're traveling your journey determines what their next step might be. Is it, hey, actually, I can see church is really supportive, you're going to change your life, I'm going to try that. Or is it, like, you're pretty horrible to me all the time, or you're jealous of me, or you keep making bad choices all the time, and don't really like how you live your life. I will push you through this a lot of ways of time. Do you know what I mean? Like, it could be that. I think last night we had my mum's 60th birthday thing. We had a video up here, and something that some in the room said, Jenny said, you have championed women in church, you've lived this life, you've journeyed all this stuff, and because of that, there's a generation of people that aren't going to have to do that same thing as you have. And I just thought that's actually like a really tangible like thing that you guys can, some of you have lived over the last how many years have you been in ministry or met some of you guys, like 30 odd years. And that's like a really tangible thing. So how you do your journey, how you respond to me, how you respond to unforeseen circumstances, how you respond to say, actually, this baggage is getting ahead of me, and I need to do something with that, and give it to Jesus, will affect those people around you, and will actually champion other people through. So, choose to enjoy your journey. Learn where you've been and why you got there, so you don't go back in circles. He's in the waiting. He's in that point where he is in that journey. Steve, would you mind putting to my voice in a minute? Other people who are around you, so when you see people that are broken, or people that are hurt, or people that are addicted to things, or people that are struggling with parts of their life, okay, the journey's been hard for them. The journey's been difficult for them. They got to a point where they start to, you know, they may have compromised something at some point in their life, and led them down the next part of that journey, led them down the next part of that journey. And I think when you understand that everyone is on a journey, you can then say, actually, how can I help you in your situation to start walking your journey slightly, like, in a way that I think God's got for you? Because God's got a plan for every single person. He's not just got a plan for people who grow up in the church. He's not got a plan for people that are just in leadership in churches. He's got a plan for every single person. He's got a plan for, you know, the kids that hang out on the corner and, like, graffiti on the walls. He's got a plan for them. But they just don't know what their journey is. They don't know what their destination is. So why are they going to walk that journey that might be quite difficult if the destination, they don't know it's difficult?
Yeah.
I think as a church, I would say no, that we're living in a tough time. We're living in a time where stuff's shaping. And actually, what's our response to the church? I think our response to the church is to journey people towards God and say, yes, this stuff is happening, but God. But what's got a plan for? But the journey's difficult. You may have known people that have been affected in Manchester. You may have walked through stuff that's happened in London. But God has a plan for not just you, for every single person, this country, the nation, Europe, the world. God's got a plan. And I don't know what it is for every single one. I've got an idea for me, a little bit. I pray most daily about my kids, that my kids will learn what their destination is, so that we'll walk through on that journey through. I don't know what it is. And I just really felt this morning to do something in a response. There may be four different responses. The first one, if you just bow your head and close your eyes for me, because the first one this morning is if this morning you've never made that decision to journey with Jesus in your life, if you've never made that decision to have God be the person that is in the destination into your sat nav and walking that journey. I just want to give you a chance this morning. I'm not going to drag it out, but I'm going to give you a chance this morning to just lift your hand, give me a wave, and say, this morning I want to respond and have God planning out my destination so I understand this journey.
Yeah.
I'll give you just 5 seconds just to put your hand up and raise it up again. If it wasn't, you can have that. Thank you, guys, it's cool. God, I just want to say thank you for speaking to people this morning. I say thank you for the journey and the destination you've got for us. And even though the journey might be tough, I just pray that you would help us keep our hope, God, on the destination. Our hope in you, and that our triumph will unfold in front of us, God. Because you are in the right time. Brilliant. So the second response is, this morning, do you need to reevaluate who you're taking with you on your journey? Are there people at the moment in your life that you've allowed into your life that are influencing you, influencing decisions, and you know that that's probably not the best thing for you? I'm not saying this is like a Facebook card when you get home and like delete those friends and the like and jazz. But I'm just saying actually, it's about wisdom. This is about you know, your life is a bigger picture than tomorrow, it's a bigger picture than next week. So actually saying, what relationships am I going to invest in, and which relationships am I going to let, maybe wind down slightly? So I just want to just, as you sit there, maybe take a quick, have a little kind of chat with God. If you don't know what that means, literally say to God, I want to know the best journey, the best destination for me. Help me make these decisions in a really wise way. Okay, we'll give them a second. The last two responses, I feel like there might be a physical response that you may want to make. I'm not saying you have to, and I'm not going to dictate how you do that, but they're kind of linked. So there's two things really. The first one is there stuff today, baggage that you've picked up, that you know is over your allowance, that you know you're starting to struggle? Not what I'm thinking, what I'm saying is what's happening is probably some of you are thinking about stuff that's happened in your life in the past that you know you probably should try and let go and keeps coming back. It's that thing that when you're in your darkest time, you're like, God can't love me because I did this. God can't love me because this happened to me. Those things are the things that probably are the baggage that are weighing you down. And I want to give you an opportunity this morning to come and respond and say, God, I want to let go of this baggage. I need to put some of this down. Because the reason Jesus died on the cross was because he wants to take that baggage and say, you don't have to carry this anymore. I've died, so you don't have to carry that anymore. He wants freedom for your life. He comes to break chains, not to shove things in the rocks that make life harder for you. And this fourth thing is, the second part of this, is to refocus on promises that God is giving you. So if there's something in this stuff that you know has been promised in your life, that you're not 100% sure where you're at the moment, but you know that God has promised you something, and maybe you need to step back and say, God, I'm sorry I've been kind of hating the journey I'm on. I want to come back into that journey. I want to start again. You know, sometimes you give a bit of a break from a yellow ball, give a bit of a break, a little water break, take on some calories, and then you can get back on that ball again. It's actually with new vigour, with renewed energy. Maybe this morning is the time for you to sort of say, actually, the promise you've got for me, I'm going to push for that. I'm going to push on for that. I'm going to take the next step, not tentatively, I'm going to take it firmly. I'm going to take the next step after that, and I'm going to follow what you've got for me. So if this morning you want to get rid of some stuff and you want someone to pray with you, or you want to refocus on the promises of God, you can come to the front, the leader will pray with you, you can maybe go to your life group leader, they can pray with you. You might want to sit in your seat and you can just pray by yourself. If you want some support with that, I encourage you to come to the front. No one's going to judge you, no one's going to look at the one or their baggage. Because it's all, everyone's on a journey, everyone has baggage that they carry. So God, as we just sort of spend maybe the next 5 or so minutes just in your presence, God. Thank you for your presence. We thank you for your presence. In your presence is power. In your presence is healing. In your presence is purpose for our lives. I just pray that this morning, as we spend the next 5 minutes just stepping into that, God, that there will be a breakthrough in people's lives. There will be, chains broken off their life. There'll be baggage released. The people will walk out today. They're bouncing their step because they're walking lighter. Thank you.